This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are on 107.7 WTPL FM, live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street on this beautiful Thursday. I was just standing outside, and it looks really nice out today. Not so much humidity. It's nice and got a nice little breeze out there.
And hopefully, the same feel will be here for our first live broadcast tomorrow, for several consecutive Fridays for July and August, right?
Yeah.
Friday afternoon street level broadcast.
It'll be fun.
It'll be fun as long as it's not a wind-driven rain.
Oh boy, yeah, that would not be fun.
That would destroy the equipment or snow.
Don't even say that. My gosh, that's horrible.
Well, I tell you what, I got in here a couple minutes later than I typically do today because it was hard to find parking in the usual, no ticket areas that you
advised me. Secret area?
Yeah, our little secret area. So I think we just had this conversation off air yesterday. I don't remember that we talked about it on the air.
I didn't hear about this, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about it on air. I was saying how after like my first month and a half, I finally got my first parking ticket. And typically, I need about 2 hours and 15 minutes to park every day. And you only have 2 hours. That's all they give you. So I'm basically vulnerable for about 15 minutes. And that's the rules. It's nothing against anybody. That's the rules. And I just take the chance because I literally can't run out during the show and buy another, half hour's worth of parking from the kiosk. So I just hang out there. So after a month and a half in May, I got my first parking ticket. Okay, I get that, So yesterday I was telling you, it's been almost 2 months.
And you got one.
I didn't say that.
Okay, I guess.
So as I left the show yesterday, I had to, 151 is when the ticket was going to run out. But as I was leaving, there was Amanda and lovely Lila sitting on the outside. She was playing with the baby and one of the other people that works here. And so I just had a little five-minute conversation and talked to Lila and Amanda and just hanging out. And then I said, all right, well, I got to go. So as I approached my car in our secret little no-ticket zone, who was standing there by my car, but somebody, a parking meter enforcement officer. So as I approached, I went, oh, no, I just missed it, just kind of like that. And she said, oh, is this your car? I said, yeah. She says, well, I didn't send it yet, so you're good. Go.
So you just made it by the skin of
your teeth. I did, only because she had the compassion on me. I mean, I was 15 minutes over. By the time I got there, at least 15 to 20 minutes beyond.
Wow.
And possibly I had to blame Lila for that. But I didn't have to do that. And the fact that I was crawling on my knees and weeping uncontrollably may have helped me get out of the ticket, too.
Oh, my gosh.
So, don't let me talk about parking tickets anymore because it almost happened just
karma.
After I told you about
yep.
it. Karma. Yeah.
Right.
So but today, because the parking spots are so scarce for the first time, I'm parking in a little higher visibility area.
I wonder why it's so much.
I don't know. Traffic was heavier than usual today around the downtown area. Can't really say for sure. There's probably a convention going on or who knows. Are the Monarchs playing this afternoon?
Maybe.
So that's it.
Maybe there's it could be a Fisher Cats game because sometimes
could very
they
well be.
In the afternoon.
That could be. And I mean, people would be smart to park up this way, although, again, only 2 hours. So
right.
if you're
right.
going to a ball game, you're going to be at least an hour vulnerable, probably,
right.
unless you leave after the fifth inning.
Right.
And that's no fun. Why
right.
why bother going to the game?
Exactly.
So there it is. But I'm seeing pictures of your sister-in-law, Lori, in Spain. She's doing a walk for mental health fundraising. A 500-mile walk across Europe. Who wouldn't absolutely love to do that?
Well, they're having a tough kind of time.
All right, so it's fairly early, right?
They just started Monday.
All right, so what's...
It was either Sunday or Monday. I don't remember.
All right,
it was either Sunday or Monday.
So they're 3 days into it, maybe
yes.
4 days.
Yeah, three to four days into it. And they had done, before yesterday, they had done 85 miles so far.
In how many days?
Okay, so you know what? They're doing about 20 miles a day.
Right,
so they must have started Sunday.
All right,
Monday,
so
Tuesday,
4 days.
Wednesday.
So they're on track.
They are on track. They are on track. But they are full of blisters.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, if they're already full of blisters, how are they going to? I mean, you know, it was funny. Did I don't remember if I said this or not, but Michelle and I walk at Doors Pond. And, you know, we do our 2 miles and we're going around. We're getting near the end. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I said, Michelle, can you imagine having to do 20 of these?
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, my God, every day?
Right.
You know, it must be like kind of undaunting, you know, when you start, you know, you're all excited to get up to it. And then I'm just like picturing myself arriving and, you know, of course, the before everybody's, you know, oh, my gosh, have fun, you know, and then you get there and you start walking. It must be like, oh,
that's at least 5 hours a day if you're talking 20 miles. And there's a lot of topography, hills and things that are going to make it difficult. If you ever, you know, talk to anybody who's done the Appalachian Trail, which is 2000 miles from Georgia to Maine. There are often injuries and setbacks early on. Then eventually you somehow figure it out. The blisters heal. You get the right kind of footwear, and then you make it. So I think this is just the early stages, and I think everybody on a 500-mile hike is going to go through that. As well as they think they are prepared, you can never totally envision it. Now, if she does this next year, you better believe that she's going to know exactly what she needs to do differently.
For sure, for sure.
But good for her and her kids.
Yes, most definitely. And you know, I was pulling off the food holiday. This is like pretty amazing. And I texted this to her. Food holiday today is Spain, the Fiesta de San Fermín. I can't say that.
Okay.
It's the running of the bulls.
Oh, that was actually a couple days ago.
And she saw it.
Yeah, I.
Well, it's like a festival they have.
So the festival goes on, but the actual physical running of the bulls.
2 days ago, they saw it.
That how cool was that?
We got pictures of it on. She has pictures of
really?
It on the blog.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, it's something like 900 yards, so it's over a half a mile through these narrow streets, something like five bulls and thousands of idiotic people running with them, and typically people get hurt, and it all culminates in the bulls running into a bull fighting ring somewhere in Spain, and they were there for it.
Yes, they
Please
were there.
Please tell
they
me,
saw
is
it.
That where the blisters came from?
But they were all excited, so that's kind of cool.
The other really big thing, and I think this one is in Italy, is the tomato festival, where tons and tons and tons of tomatoes are thrown by people at each other all day long, and it's just disgusting looking.
Yeah, that must be gross. But, tomatoes.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So, and for listeners that want to do follow her blog, you can follow it at CaminoMentalHealthWalk.com and her she does daily blogs and all.
So. All right. So 500 miles, and we said it was 20 miles a day.
18 to 22, 18 I guess, to is 20. What they're trying to get in between.
All right. So that's when does she expect to finish this?
They're coming home the first week of August or second week of August, I think. So,
wow.
They got to keep going.
They got to keep the pedal to the metal. Keep the blisters from festering, and you don't want to lose a leg or anything while you're there.
I know.
Sure.
And just to let listeners know, we have a great show today. We'll be joined shortly with MHP Untapped, Michael Helpley Pierce. We're going to talk about beer. And then at the top of the hour, we're going to talk with Linda Ditch from Kansas. And she did change her blog. And I did let my social media girl know so she can change our Facebook and web page. But you can find her blog now at thereandbackagainfood.com.
What, and your dad, George?
And dad will
Lawrence,
be on.
The legendary one
later.
Will be here. Do we have any idea what he is sharing with us today?
I don't. I didn't quite. I saw him for very little this morning.
Yeah.
I had a crazy morning. I had a really, really crazy morning.
Was it a
morning.
Good crazy morning? Or just
Well, I left the house at 6:15. Didn't get back till about 9, and then I just decided not to change because I had too many things to do at home and whatever. But I went to work out, but I had my sister-in-law's car because my car was in the shop.
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of running around. And then when I left to work out, after I got my car and stuff, Michelle dropped me off over there, I had to go and get it registered. Because I hadn't registered yet. So I go over to Bedford, and of course I didn't have the right paperwork, and I'm like, give me a break. So I had to go back to Tully, and I had to change my paperwork. No,
the one here,
Tully,
locally.
Manchester.
Right.
Yep. And I had to change my paperwork and then go all the way back to Bedford. You know, those ladies over there, I don't know. There's this one girl that's there, and if I would have been in her line, I would have been fine.
Yeah.
And I almost hesitated and said, I'll wait for her, and I'm like, nah. And boom, I knew. I'm like, I was doomed.
I've never gone to the one in Bedford. I go to the one in Manchester on South Willow, which actually runs through pretty good. Never had a problem there. But then again, I never had the wrong paperwork, so that can...
Well, this is the town hall.
Oh, the town hall, that's right.
Yeah, the town hall to register my car.
That's right. I was thinking of the registry.
Pain in the neck. It was, you know, in the business name, my name wasn't on it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, really? I mean, come on. But anyway, so it was just a crazy morning.
Tough to be you. All right, so we got some good beer talk ahead.
We do.
Well, I say let's take a break and get Michael in here. Did you bring a guest today?
I think he did.
Yeah,
there
cool.
Is there. The green room is
a guest brewer.
A guest, yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Did they bring growlers today?
I don't know.
No!
They didn't again?
They're fired.
Seriously.
Let's do a segment on wine instead. That's all right.
All right, you're listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break. We'll be right back. MHP Untapped.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It must be Thirsty Thursday because Food for Thought is about to pour you a liquid lunch with MHP Untapped. Hang out with us while we talk with brewers and beer movers and shakers, discuss New Hampshire beer culture and events, and answer calls to our studio live at 866-823-1077. And now, Carol and Mike bring you MHP Untapped.
That was awesome.
That sounds so cool.
Get your own special introduction.
See, you know, what
that's
the heck?
Great, but now everybody's going to want that. You are a troublemaker.
But I brought it to the table. I didn't ask you guys to do it. And I have to throw out a little thank you to my friend Tony Wolf. Tony Wolf with an E at the end .com did the voiceover on that. He does all my voiceover work. And he literally took a kind of drab script and an old beat from a hip-hop project I was involved in about 8 years ago and breathed life into it and created what you guys just heard. So props to Tony Wolf.
Tony's great, but I do it for half price.
That's a whole nother story.
So it's good to be back.
Yeah, I think you missed us.
I did. Yeah.
Was he not here last? I wasn't here last.
You were. Week. Well, it was an incomplete. Like we weren't all here.
Yeah. I mean? Yeah. The vibe just wasn't happening, yeah. Huh?
And you know, Mike and I yesterday were talking about Ebenezer Brewery.
Ah.
And he's going.
I'm going tomorrow.
Excellent.
To talk to Carl for my my podcast Reset. 40 is the new happy, even though I know he's not quite 40 yet.
Yeah, I think he just turned 30.
Oh, geez. I'll put an asterisk.
He wears it well. Yeah. Just ish, right?
Yeah, that's right. 40-ish is the new happy. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing his place, and his story is an amazing one.
It absolutely
But
is.
I think there are so many amazing stories of brewers that said, you know, I'm done with corporate America. I need to find something to fill my soul and, you know, fill my cup.
And I think that... it's something that people turn to because it's generally really different than what they did before, whatever it is, whether they were an investment banker or drove a tank in the army or were an engineer dealing with processes that had nothing to do with fermentation. I think it's just a big departure from almost anything else you could do with your life. And that's why it's got such an appeal for people that are in exactly that kind of position that you're talking about.
And there's a certain creativity to it. There's a certain mad scientist factor to it. And I think blending the two together, I mean, the sky's the limit with what kind of concoctions these brewers can create.
Absolutely.
I mean, the brewers, they live in such an innovative...
We should introduce the voice.
Yes, the voice we'll coming from the distance. Yeah. This is a good friend of mine, Seth Simone, and he operates Hophead United. And they are, I guess the short story is they're a marketing arm for the craft beer industry. He does beer tastings that are unlike any other tasting events you've ever done. And he also has a Hophead Academy, which is going to be teaching all kinds of classes from kind of introductory level to professional level classes on every aspect of brewing and beer production. So why don't we let him tell his own story?
Yeah, so what I was saying is, you know, these brewers, they live in such a creative and innovative environment. So every day, that's where they are, that's where they sit. And nobody really ever services them from their perspective. So that's where Hophead United comes in. And what we do is we try to live in that innovative and creative environment every day in the same way that they do. We try to help bring to light the story behind the beer and the story behind every beer that they make. So if you were to ask any craft beer fan why they drink craft beer, it's because there's a story behind it. It's because there's passion, there's creativity, there's love, right? Put right into that beer, and it's relatable, it's personable. And that's why you have such an attachment to craft beer from the craft beer fans. And we try to help the brewers tell that story and get that story to the craft beer fans, because every fan wants to hear that story. They want to have that intimate, relatable experience that at a normal beer festival or in a normal situation, they aren't able to achieve.
Does the average beer drinker, craft brew drinker care? I mean, I do, because I'm a guy that loves stories. Do they just want something that tastes good coming out of the bottle or the growler or the tap? Or do they care that, for instance, Abel Ebenezer has a great story of the Pine Tree Revolution and riot and everything as kind of the backdrop for the almost for the branding attitude of his
Absolutely.
Beer?
Absolutely. And I think that there's so much of that going on that people that have more than a passing involvement in craft beer can't help but get drawn into the stories. And I think that ultimately is what helps determine your success. I mean, you have to have good beer. You have to have good marketing. You have to have good logistics. If any of those are missing, you're going to fail. But if you have a great story behind you, and if you can get that story right into the ear of a beer drinker personally, that's going to cause a huge level of loyalty, and it's going to make them want to share that story with other people. And you go to a festival with 2,000 people, and honestly, I don't go to a lot of those festivals. I do a table at them because I want to interact with folks, but I know that when I go to one of those, it's hard to talk to people because there's such a long line and there's so much going on, and you don't always get to talk to the actual brewer. A lot of the time you're talking to a distributor, or you're talking to somebody that they were able to get to work that table for them because they had to cover the brewery that day. So you don't necessarily get the intimate experience that Hophead United can bring, where you sit down, you hear this brewer talk for 15 minutes, you drink their samples as they're telling you a story on stage, and then the next one comes up and does the same thing, and you get to hear this from six different brewers.
Yeah, so that goes into the Hop Talk, the style of event that we run. It's a TED-style presentation given from a brewer's perspective, and there are six brewers on hand giving these presentations to 200 people. So instead of dealing with 500 people, you're dealing with 3,000 people or 1,000 people, you're dealing with 200 people, and they have a much more relatable experience to that brewer, and they get 15 minutes to hear that brewer's story and, you know, who they are, where they came from, why they brew what they brew. And you in turn are seated, you're not in line, the beer's served to you, you're getting two samples of their most, you know, sought after product. And they're really able to help drive a little bit more recognition with their fans to the product that they have. And then afterwards, you have about an hour of a Q&A that you have time to really interact with the brewers and ask some of the questions that you might have been wanting to ask or have a little bit more of a relatable experience.
So are these ongoing events that you have, or like when is the next one? Michael was talking about classes also. So
the Hop Talk event, the first one, will kick off on August 29th. It's held at the Radisson in Nashua, New Hampshire. That'll be from 2 to 6. And the six brewers that will be there will be Abel Ebenezer, Kelson, 603, Candia Road Brewing, Martha's Exchange, and Swift Current.
I'm impressed that you just pulled that right out of your, you know. He wasn't looking at anything on that.
And, you know, I've been working it for so long that it's kind of ingrained in me. But they'll be reoccurring, and there'll be a rotating brewer schedule, and they'll be held all over the state of New Hampshire to kind of accommodate the brewers in their location so that they don't have to travel very far to be a part of the event. But I'm also working all throughout New England, so Maine, Mass, New Hampshire, eventually getting into Vermont.
So if someone likes your Facebook or Twitter account, you'll keep everybody updated? Is that?
Absolutely.
Do people need tickets to get to these events, or how does that work?
So the Hop Talks and for the Hop Head Academy, the tickets for the events are available through Eventbrite. The links are on our website, which is hopheadunited.com. And to get into the Hop Talks, it's a $65 ticket. The Hop Head Academy classes will be $35. They're taught at the brewery by the brewers for about 35 people. And it's an array of topics. You know, as Michael said, it goes from the basic brewer 101 processy, knowing your ingredients, to more advanced brewing, how to specialize in, you know, dark beers or
judging overview, IPA, the beer, the myth, the legend. Some really cool classes that you can't, I mean, as far as I know, there's only really basic homebrewing and advanced homebrewing or intermediate homebrewing classes available in the state. And there's really only at a couple of locations. I know Kettle to Keg in Pembroke does a lot because I teach a lot of classes there. And I know a couple of the other homebrew shops do classes, but really that's about the only format you can have to get any kind of real technical learning on either home or commercial brewing. So this is a really cool opportunity for people kind of anywhere in that brewing continuum.
All right, let me back up here. We talked about branding and the story behind the story, which interests me more than the beer itself in many cases. So let me ask you this, Seth. How important is a kind of a cool, catchy, clever, creative name? So at least it engenders some kind of conversation that can let you get the story out. That's kind of what opens the door. Now tell me the story behind it.
So I think if you look at Abel Ebenezer, right, they do a fantastic job around that. So if you look at the Abel story themselves and then how they brand each beer and the story they place behind each beer. So if you follow their blog, they have a continuing story about their beer, Burn the Ships, and how it follows in phases. And as Mike said, that really drives the interest behind the beer. So it's, you're not just relating to the taste of the beer or the person you might have chatted to that served you the beer. You're actually getting to know more about why that beer is important to that brewer. So to answer your question very long-windedly, and I apologize for that, it is true that you have to have a strong marketing ploy when you're developing your beer and your naming infrastructure to really help drive that recognition. Because, I mean, you can name a beer anything, but if it doesn't coincide or it doesn't make sense, right?
Doesn't resonate.
People aren't going to relate.
All right. So I know nothing about Shock Top. What's the story behind Shock Top beer?
So do you consider Shock Top a craft beer?
Well, you know what? And I can't say that I can answer that question. I know that it's very wide. It's very mainstream.
No.
All right. So, but what is the story behind a name like that? With it, somebody with like an orange mohawk.
It's a catchy label that people can walk by, and it's bright and it stands out to you. And you know, it's, I believe, made by Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
So
okay.
There really isn't a drafted story behind why Shock Top is Shock Top, other than it has a bright collective.
It's bold. It's vibrant. It's young.
Exactly.
It's you.
All right, so now clearly I'm obviously not very well versed in craft beers, and to me, it almost kind of looks like it, which I'm going to guess is the intention. No, Anheuser-Busch didn't want anybody to know that it was an Anheuser-Busch product, I would guess.
That's correct. That's generally how they roll. They have the big three have some brands they've developed themselves that they put a lot of distance on. In fact, in the last 3 months, both Kirin Ichiban and one of the other brews, international beers, I can't remember what it was. It was Beck's, I think. That's actually brewed by Anheuser-Busch in America, but their labels say, you know, traditional German recipe based on the purity law of 1514 or Japanese style, but they don't actually say they're made in Japan or Germany. And there have been class action lawsuits that Anheuser-Busch lost both of them.
Did they?
Maybe Miller Coors was one and Anheuser-Busch was the other, but that they were trying to even take these international brands to pretend that they were brewed elsewhere. And as far as craft beer, you can't even find their name on the bottom a lot of their packaging. I mean, Curious Traveler and Angry Orchard are both owned by Sam Adams, but unless you see the Sam Adams rep show at the store or the bar with swag for all of those brands, you're not going to find Boston Beer Company on any of their packaging. They want you to think that they're small independent brands.
So what this tells me is that the big boys are feeling the pressure from the collective craft brewing impact, which certainly has had a lot of impact.
Absolutely. So if you look at craft beer today, nationally, we're at the number of breweries we were at pre-prohibition. So think about that, right? Pre-prohibition, you didn't really have to travel more than, say, 15 miles to your local brewery, and you had one spaced out every such distance.
You had one in your neighborhood. You would go get a growler, which was a pail versus a glass jar with a lid.
Right. So you're at that number pre-prohibition, and craft beer has taken, I want to say, it's something like 49 or 51% of the market. So that's why you see the Anheuser-Busch out there buying a lot of the bigger named craft breweries right now, trying to reestablish market hold and market share. And as Mike was just mentioning, you know, Coors Miller, Blue Moon, which they try to label as a craft beer, is produced by them. And it's had a tremendous backlash on.
There's a lawsuit pending on that, I believe, that somebody said because they call it the art of craft or something like that, that they're claiming they're a craft beer, which the truth is craft beer as a phrase is defined by the Brewers Association, and every year the threshold for how much beer you're allowed to make and still be called a craft brewery gets bumped up so that Sam Adams can stay underneath that threshold.
Seriously?
And still be a craft
it's designed for them?
They have they're the big boy on the playground.
Yeah.
So they kind of get to define. I mean, it's not a legally binding term. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of a descriptor that I'm sure is legally binding on some level, but it doesn't describe anything about the beer itself. It just says that the company that makes it makes less than X.
All right. So if Jim Cook enters the market 30 years later today with the Sam Adams beer that he produces, would it succeed based on all the other competition?
He certainly could, and there are a lot of people that are doing what he did, or they're going. I mean, Carl from Able is going bar to bar. He's the brewer. He's the owner. He's the guy that shows up and tries to sell the barkeep or the bottle shop. Well, not in his case, not the bottle shop owner, but he's trying to create that relationship one handshake at a time. That's kind of how Jim did it with a briefcase showing up at Boston bars.
Seems to be working. After a year, I see all the dots on the map for Abel Ebenezer, and yeah. It seems like it's happening for them.
And we're up to, I think there's 42 breweries in New Hampshire now, with at least half that many that are legally in process, and probably some that haven't actually filed any paperwork yet, but are
in
the works.
Is that a lot for a state like this? A new survey this week shows that New Hampshire is the number two per capita beer-consuming state in the country. Behind, any guesses?
Vermont, Maine.
Vermont is number five. Number one is North Dakota.
North Dakota. How is it that was
Think about it.
I was in 49 states with my podcast before I could get into North Dakota.
Stop
it took
it.
Me almost 9 months to get into North Dakota. True story. That's why Seth's laughing.
Well, and I think it's only my theory that because of the oil fracking and everything else has drawn such a huge male contingency and these pop-up towns that then deflate just as quickly based on the whole oil thing, I think they're just getting into beer. And that was like a market ripe for beer drinking, whether it's craft beer or the big boys.
I would be inclined to think it's not.
You think that's not the reason?
I think that it's not craft beer that's being consumed in North Dakota. I think it's probably hardworking oil field workers that want to come home and put a couple
tastes.
Of 30 kits down.
That's appealing. All right, so but you're in all 50 states now?
We are, absolutely. And 49, if not 50 countries as well.
Whoa, impressive.
Yeah, it's been a really fun ride. It's interesting to go someplace and have somebody recognize me and say, "Oh, you're MHP from the Tap Handle Show." And I've never met this person, and I don't have a logoed shirt on, but somehow they know
right.
who I am.
How long has the podcast Tap Handle Show been in existence?
We went on the air February of last year, so almost 18 months.
18 months, and you're being recognized by your face.
Yeah,
essentially.
I literally showed up at Cask and Vine and Dairy the other day, and somebody said, "Oh, you're MHP from the Tap Handle Show." Okay. I guess I am.
Are you signing autographs yet, or have we not come to that yet?
Well, I guess when I really need the money, I'll probably, put them on eBay.
His agent takes a cut of that, so he's very mild and modest when it comes to those
things. Are you saying you want to be my agent, Seth?
No.
For a minute, I thought he was.
I know, right?
You're too uncontrollable.
I am. I need a very heavy-duty string for my balloon.
Michael, why don't we talk about the Granite State Brewers Association Summerfest coming up?
Excellent. I'm so glad you brought that up because I have the screen up right in front of me.
There you go.
This is a really interesting event. This is going to be different from a lot of the Brewers Festivals because it's not so compacted. It's outside, so there's plenty of room to breathe. There's 33 breweries already confirmed. I think they are only New Hampshire breweries. I don't think they're letting anybody out of state in. It's in Arms Park, which is right next to Millie's Tavern, and it's the Granite State Brewers Association, which is a fairly new organization, about 18 months old, and this is the second one that they've done. It looks like it's going to be a great time. Live music, they're having a chicken wing competition?
A chicken wing competition. It also supports a local homeless charity.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And it's going to be right there next to Millie's, and actually, as soon as the event is over, Sam from Swift Current, who we had on here a few episodes
back.
He will be debuting their two new beers at Millie's, which is right next to Arms Park. So as soon as the festivities are done outside, which I believe is 5 o'clock, people can head right into Millie's and try some other amazing local beer.
Yeah, Peter Telge has certainly been in the craft brewing world for a long time.
Oh, yeah. He was the second or third in the second in the state to open a brew pub. I think he was right after the folks that opened.
Before he was brew pub before brew pub was cool, I guess.
Yeah,
if they're gonna do a country song, that might be it.
Wrote a song about it. Want to hear it? Here it goes.
So this, again, what's the dates for this?
This is on the 25th of July, so that's a couple of weeks out on Saturday. There are the VIP starts at noon, and the standard admission starts at 1. The tickets start cheap. They're $30 for general, $40 for VIP. There's VIP parking, but, I mean, it's a big town. You can park 3 blocks away and you'll be fine. I would just park at the Mills. I'm sure there'll be plenty of parking over there. But it runs from 1 to 5, and it will be busy. I bet they're going to sell all the tickets they want to sell.
A wing-eating contest. Did you see that, Nathan's Hot Dog annual competition on Long Island every year? I mean, it's the most watched eating competition.
Right.
And a guy from New Hampshire won it this year. So perhaps, and he said he's going to try to make a living as a competitive eater, including wings. And yeah, you okay?
Yeah, I am now.
So you may very well see this guy.
I don't think it's a wing eating contest. I think it's the different restaurants locally
bring their
wings, and they're like 50 cents a piece or something like that, and you vote on which one you like the best.
Oh, okay. I was under the wrong impression there. Right. But a wing eating competition might draw some more people.
Yeah, maybe something boneless would be better. I don't know.
Yeah.
People trying to force food down their throat as fast as they can and choking on a
60
chicken.
Some hot dogs in 10 minutes, I think.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And he's no bigger than I am. In fact, he's
most
probably...
competitive eaters.
I know.
Tiny.
How do they do it?
I don't know.
Willpower or...
But I think he made either $3,000 or $10,000, and he's done well in some other events, so he says, yeah, I can make a living doing this.
Wow.
Okay. We all got to do something, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. It's certainly an interesting job. It's not when you meet a lot of people. Oh, I got a ton of friends that do that competitive eating thing. Yeah, it's real lucrative.
I'd like to know what happens like before, what he does to prep for it, and then what happens after.
Well, they practice a lot. The day of, I'm not really sure. But if you've ever noticed, they dip, like the hot dog eaters, they dip the buns in water. For some reason, it makes it go down faster, I guess.
I think now competitive drinking, that would be something totally different. And
Do you speak from experience on that?
Well, I have had some sponsorship, in the past. I'm not going to lie about it.
Should we take a break?
We need to take a break.
Let Michael recompose himself here. Get his lawyer on the phone. Yeah.
You're listening to Food for Thought. Michael Helpley Pierce is in the house, along with Seth Simonian of, this is very bad.
Hophead United. Yeah.
Hophead United. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Casey's Rib Shack is one of our fine sponsors. Famous Hickory Smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street, Manchester. Online at ribshack.net and Grasshopper's Garden Supply. Will be joining us live our summer series outdoors on the sidewalk in front of Midtown Cafe tomorrow. Keith from Grasshopper's Garden Center on New River Road in New Boston will join us. And I can't wait to see him. He is also an extra in movies. And he's done movies with Adam Sandler and other kind of cool people. So, once we get the obligatory gardening conversation out of the way, we'll
pick his ear.
We'll pick his ear. Well, you can do that. I'll just sit back and... You know.
They have utensils for that.
Yeah, they actually do.
Yeah.
They actually do. It's really weird.
Nothing sharper than your elbow. That's what my doctor
that's what they say, for sure. This is the whole segment about beer. We do it every week. Michael Hopley Pierce is here. MHP, Tap Handle Show, of course, is the podcast. They can find it how, Michael?
You can www.thetaphandleshow.com or Stitcher or iTunes. We're also on IPMNation.com streaming radio. If you just Google the Tap Handle Show, you can find us. Our website always has the most recent episode right at the top with an embedded player. So if you go to thetaphandleshow.com, you see that little arrow right at the top, just press it and this melodious voice will start coming out of your speakers.
And a face to match, by the way.
I have a melodious face. People say, you got a kind face. A kind I don't like.
What's great is Michael always brings along, or typically does, a guest, somebody involved somehow in craft brewing, either brewers or, in today's case, somebody involved in the promotion and the furtherment of education in the industry. Hophead United co-founder Seth Simonian is here. All right, Seth, you wanted to add a little bit to when we talked about branding and the story behind and getting the word out so that it captivates the imagination. You know, I was suckered into the Shock Top thing because, you know, I'm learning more now. But so tell us how the importance of that, maybe if you have an example. I don't know.
Yeah, so, you know, we talked a little bit about Abel Ebenezer, but even if you look at the main brewing company, their titles of their beers are very simplistic. You know, they title lunch
dinner. Another one.
So it keeps to their branding of being, a very simple, a very homegrown, a very family-oriented business.
Plain white paper label, literally. That's their shtick.
like it's a generic almost.
Mm-hmm. And wow. it creates such a buzz around who they are and what they do and as they produce it. And when the releases are that people start to build that recognition solely through the story that kind of filters in with the beer. So that kind of reinforces the importance of the stories behind the beer to really help elevate why the craft beer drinker drinks craft beer.
All right. So I did a small piece for New Hampshire Magazine about a year and a half ago involving craft beer in New Hampshire. And I asked one of the brewers, I don't recall who it was, are women involved in this? And that particular person said, yes, they are. They're very involved. I don't know if it's a 50-50, but more than I think people would have expected.
I think about 35% of craft beer drinkers are women. I don't think it's quite hit the what you would expect from, you know, just a demographic distribution of men and women, but it's certainly more than I think you would expect based on sort of standard gender roles where women don't drink beer.
Are you talking drinkers or are you talking craft
drinkers,
brewers?
Drinkers.
Oh, okay.
But that's a good point. I'd be curious to know how many crafters tend to be women.
Not a lot.
It's
mostly a boys' club. Certainly Throwback on the Seacoast. Those ladies are doing amazing beer. They were near the sort of the first wave of craft brewers, and they have expanded in probably maybe 2 years-ish, they've expanded outside of their 3-barrel setup. So a barrel is 31 gallons. It's kind of the standard measurement in the brewing world. They were on a 3-barrel system, which is fairly small, and they're now moving to, I believe, a 15-barrel system, and they've just bought a huge farm and property not far from their current location that they are doing a fit-up on right now. And they've been really, really successful. We interviewed them on the show, and they were really cool ladies.
So they doing girly beer? I mean, are they...
They're doing the traditional IPAs.
Yeah.
Their beers are absolutely phenomenal.
They do use more interesting ingredients than I think most New Hampshire brewers do, and a lot of them are locally sourced produce that they either grow themselves or get from local farmers, and most of their ingredients come from 150 miles or less. Yeah. So they're using grain from a maltster in Hadley, Massachusetts, whereas most people are buying grain from Iowa or Canada or Germany. And they're using local hops when they can, and for their hot pepper beer, they're using local hot peppers and local maple syrup and a lot of local ingredients. So I think that they're a little bit more sort of the dogfish side of the road, where they're not afraid to put stuff that's not been traditionally used in beer into beer, but I wouldn't say they're doing ridiculously crazy stuff.
What certainly is the
not
name of
girly
that brewery
stuff.
Again?
Throwback.
Throwback.
And I mean, it's part of going back to branding, right? Part of their branding is farm to table. So they do that. Their focus is 100% on fresh ingredients, and it's locally sourced. I mean, that's part of ingrained in their business of who they are and behind their name, what they stand for.
And this is an all female owned.
It's two women that own it, and it's not all women that work there. There's at least one guy that works there. But
are they coming to your big brewfest?
I'm pretty sure they were there last year. I'd be surprised if they weren't there this year.
Cool.
Very cool.
And I mean, even going beyond that, there's a very large amount of women that work within the industry.
All right. Well, you answered that question.
See how fast it goes by?
I know.
It really does.
And I'm going to get that empty feeling again, aren't I?
Just go roll
MHP,
over and go to sleep.
Thank you very much. Seth, it was nice to meet you.
It was a pleasure to meet you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks,
we're
going
to have to go to that brew fest and
check like
it out.
Sounds like fun, except I got something going on that day.
Well, I'll have a table. Stop by and see me. I'll be there with, I'm not sure who I'm going to have with me. Maybe I'll drag Seth.
Grab
I'll
a growler
have my own
for
table,
me.
Right. So it'll be great.
We'll be the loud corner.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
We will be the loud corner.
All right. We're at the top of the hour. Food for Thought, live at the Beacon Building, 814 Elm Street. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Linda Ditch from Kansas.
Cool.